Tech Talk with Jess Kelly on News Talk.
Thanks to Harvey Norman. From setup and support to full repair, our Love Tech teams at Harvey Norman are here for the lifetime of your technology.
Hello and welcome to Tech Talk. Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up this week, we look at how technology has transformed the casino floor in Las Vegas. We ask what a table tennis playing robot can tell us about the future of work. And Irish company Drop want to transform your kitchen, taking the stress out of meal prep. As always, you can email the show techtalk@newstalk.com or tweet with hashtag TechTalkNT. Now, if you heard last week's show, you'll know that we were at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas with Harvey Norman. It was an incredibly busy week, but before the tech madness kicked off, I jumped on a bus downtown to meet with Patrick Hughes, the Irishman who runs the Fremont Street Experience. We spoke about his life in Las Vegas and how technology has disrupted the casino floor.
The Fremont Street Experience is a six-city block entertainment district. It's a pedestrianised area anchored by the world's largest LED screen, which was created about 23 years ago in an effort to revitalise downtown Las Vegas. And coincidentally, right now, we are about to embark on a renovation of the world's largest LED screen. So we have a whole new 1,500-foot LED screen coming in. And we'll start installation of that in May, completion in December, unveiling for New Year's next year.
So we can tell by your accent that you're an Irishman. So how did you go from Ireland to running downtown Las Vegas?
Yeah, crazy. Would never have imagined it, I can tell you that. So graduated from De La Salle and Churchtown in 87, I think. And then, as a lot of your listeners will remember, that the country was in a depression back then, and a lot of its youth had to leave. But before that, while I was playing rugby for Wanderers, I ended up dealing cards for Terry Rogers, who was probably one of the most famous bookmakers at the time. And I started dealing cards in Terry's apartment above his betting office in Fairview Strand. And I was dealing poker to some of the world's largest poker players at the time. And then, lo and behold, a casino in Luton advertised looking for staff. And about 12 or 13 of us from Dublin and from around Ireland went to Luton and were trained properly in casinos, or in dealing cards. And then from there, as you do... You get 18 months of dealing experience under your belt and then move on. So I went to South Africa for a couple of years, cruise ship in the Caribbean, ran a casino in Eastern Europe, and ended up coming to Vegas 23-odd years ago to settle down, of all things. Imagine that. And then worked my way back up. And but by that age, by the ripe old age of 25, I'd actually run three casinos at that time. And then the opportunity came. I worked my way back up to running casino hotels here in Vegas for 6 years before coming down to take this opportunity to run the Fremont Street Experience, which is the busiest street in Las Vegas. 22 million people a year walk down this street. And here I've been now for almost 3 years.
Which is just an incredible story. Talk to me about what's involved with running a casino. Like, what goes into that?
So they are... it's a big old box, right? You have different shaped boxes, some newer, some older, same old, but they have the same old bells and whistles inside them, from hotel rooms to restaurants and bars to casino gaming, from sports books to table games, slot machines, Keno, I mean, you name it. So a couple of the properties I ran, they may seem like big numbers, compared to home, but we had 300 hotel rooms. Actually, one place had 550 hotel rooms, 2,000 slot machines, 40 table games, 6 bars and restaurants, all that kind of average stuff. But those are one of the smaller properties, as you can imagine, and you've been to Vegas now a few times. The bigger properties are on a massive scale compared to that, from the Venetian and the Sands, where CES is, 7,500 hotel rooms in that property, 12,000 staff on that property. Crazy numbers, and they're throwing off crazy revenues as well. So, day-to-day operations, I must say, one of the things I miss most about working directly in casinos is having relationships with the customers. Because right now, we have just people coming down a street or going on a zip line. But that's one of the things I miss. One of the biggest differences is the relationships with the customers. And we have staff here, of course. But it's a day-to-day, 24/7 operation that I've basically been in now for 20-odd years.
The people who walk through the floor of a casino, they vary from people like myself who are at a conference who put $5 in a slot machine and think they're a high roller. And then you have the actual high rollers who will gamble thousands and thousands of dollars on a night. How do you cater to each of their needs?
So, like any customer and any business, whether it be in Ireland or the States or anywhere around the world where you have customers, you direct your time towards the customers, not who give you the most volume, but realistically should be give you the most profit. So, and everyone has their own desires, for the run-of-the-mill retail customer, as we'd call them, they get a free drink while they gamble, right? Up to your high roller, you say thousands and thousands, let's call it hundreds of thousands a night, and there are a few out there still who will head up into the seven digits in a night's gambling. But they'll require everything from manicure to the special meals to limousine to flights and all that stuff. So there's all sorts of different levels. But you gauge them based upon the profitability and how much you're willing and able to reinvest back into that customer to maintain their loyalty.
Does the house always win?
So these are mathematical equations, right? These are permutations, and built into all games is a theoretical percentage, a theoretical hold percentage. So over infinium, over a certain amount of possibilities and permutations, the house should win. And on table games, for example, those percentages are actually a little higher. Slot machines can be a lot lower. But because you've got so many machines, there's so much more volume, slot machines range normally from around 3% to 12%. So not that high when you think about
it.
No, it's not great. But when you have so much volume, yeah, the house will generally always win. But we also need customers to win, because that's what keeps people coming back. I got to tell you, for anyone who hasn't gambled, there's no better feeling to walking out of a place, whether it be one of your local little Paddy Power betting shops or a massive casino. There's no better feeling than walking out with their money. So we need winners. Absolutely, we all do. We need people to go home with those stories.
Talking of stories, let me throw some conspiracy theories at you. Do the slot machines have a limit at which point then they turn and they take all the money back if somebody's doing quite well?
No. So not the machines here in Nevada, because they are governed by the Gaming Control Board, which is an independent entity, which is an oversight to protect consumers. Within, it's called an EPROM, which is the program for each of the machines. It's a program. Every spin must be independent of the next one or the previous one, completely independent, which means it's complete random number generator every spin. So it has nothing to do with the previous one, has nothing to do with the next one. And ultimately, over time, because that's how the program is programmed, the software is programmed, the machine will win. So there's no need for such influences like that.
Are people monitored on CCTV to see how much they spend?
People are monitored constantly on closed circuit television, is what you're talking about, or surveillance systems, but not for how much they spend. No, it's more for cheating, and it's more for safety, and more for security. And as you can imagine, last year we had a horrendous event, in 2017, on October 1st. That's what the security and surveillance systems are used for. No, absolutely, you'll have people, supervisors there. If you're using a player tracking card, it will track your play. But it's more to give you benefits, to track your spend and be able to have us as operators be able to reinvest back into that customer. But not tracking for winning and losing, not necessarily. But for tracking for potential cheating, yeah, absolutely.
And when you are running these different casinos that you ran over your career, what are the different elements that you instill to ensure that people spend as much time and therefore as much money as possible?
So, yeah, very interesting. there are two factors that determine people's habits when they come to a place like Las Vegas. It's available time and available money. You're absolutely correct. So we want to create a comfortable environment, but these old wives' tales of us pumping oxygen into a casino or not having natural light come in, yeah, they may have been some theories back in the day, but those are all history now. There's no need for such things. Fact is, you want a comfortable environment. Fact is, you know, we consider it like a car dealership, where you know, the most important thing, the biggest challenge we have, is to get somebody to walk through your doors. Once they walk through the doors, then everything else should take care of itself, such as good service, comfortable environment, be fair, and provide services that make people want to come back. And that is our biggest challenge, I would say, in our industry, in the tourism industry. I've always described it as, we're in the business of creating habits. I want people to feel comfortable coming back, and whether it be the personal interaction or the services that we provide, from a swimming pool down to a meal, those are the real keys to making somebody come back, which is our biggest challenge at all times.
And do you ever feel guilty having worked in this industry? Because for every person who wins and gets that great feeling of winning, whether it's $10 or $100,000, there are people who lose and lose bad.
Yeah, I would say earlier on in my career, when I would see people losing money that they shouldn't have. But since then, and more recently, we all have a responsibility to our customers. And there's a gaming council to responsible gaming in a council to responsible gaming in Nevada, for example. And it's their job and our job. If we see someone and sense that somebody is losing more money than they should, we actually recommend that they go and get help. There is a social responsibility as well. Again, if our primary job is to make sure that people keep on coming back to enjoy themselves, then we are responsible to those people to make sure they enjoy themselves responsibly. Same for drinking, same for gambling. Just make sure they have fun and come back.
And how has tech changed this industry over the last two decades that you've been in it?
Customer service relationships, so a customer relationship management system, CRMs, that we do track. But we can only track somebody's play if they voluntarily put their player's card into a machine or if they want to be tracked. That gives us the ability to evaluate the profitability of a customer and gives us all the business intelligence that comes with that to target those customers with the right offers and customize offers to get them to come back, that work for them. So business intelligence is one. And the second is, as you walk through casinos now, is the sound, right? So you don't no longer hear the ding, 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 ding sound of coins hitting the coin tray, because ticket in, ticket out technology, which means that you no longer have to put a coin in, you can rack up credits, and then you can cash out the credits for a redeemable coupon that you can put into the next machine. That has certainly helped ease of play. Also helped business as well, because it's easier to move your funds or your credits from machine to machine. But I would say business intelligence is probably the biggest one. That has certainly helped the industry in most recent times.
I walked down the strip today as I was coming here, and I walked through a few of the casinos just to try and get a sense of the atmosphere. And one thing that struck me as I saw people playing on the slot machines in particular was, how will this survive in the era of internet gaming and internet gambling? Because there's the same gratification in that you win money, you don't have to leave your home, and you can still have the same fun.
I would challenge that statement that you could have the same fun at home that you can have in a casino in Vegas.
I'm really boring as a human.
Right, think about that for a second. There is nothing like Las Vegas. There's nothing like Atlantic City. There's nothing like Macau or Singapore or some of the casinos in London or in France, wherever around the world. There's nothing like the atmosphere of coming into these places, because they all feel different. So, you can't. Internet gaming isn't really a competition. What it does is it gets people more involved in an entertainment that is fun. But ultimately, at the end of the day, there's sitting in a dark room in your bedroom playing cards isn't the same as coming down and playing at Binion's Casino on a Fremont Street experience. Binion's, where poker began, there's nothing like that. So these places are truly unique, and highly recommend that people come and visit. And it's not just for gambling, right? Keep in mind, we are now at the stage where gaming revenues as a ratio and percentage of overall revenues is at its lowest point in the history of this city. Right. Entertainment is what it's all about. Entertainment, interactive experiences, so I'm going to call shows, food, culinary experiences here are on a level that they've never been at before. The shows, the entertainment, the nightclubs, the pools, they are actually generating more revenue than gaming and gambling now. And that's a very important point for people to think about when considering to come to somewhere like Las Vegas. It's not about gambling. It's a piece of it. Overall entertainment is what it's all about. And that's exactly where this industry is going.
So talk to me about what you guys offer downtown here on your glorious street. As I was waiting to come in, I saw two people zipline over my head, which was a weird and wonderful thing.
Yeah. So as I said, we're about to embark on a renovation of the world's largest LED screen, which will be complete by the end of December. Wow, 2019. So that's the anchor of the Fremont Street experience. We also have world's busiest zipline. We went through 500,000 riders last year, and it is an amazing experience underneath the canopy. So as you can imagine, we have musical stages below, you've got the LED screen above, and the zip line in the middle. Cannot be replicated anywhere. But also we're surrounded by some of the original properties, original hotel casino properties that legends of the casino industry and gaming industry built. Steve Wynn's first property was here, the Golden Nugget.
No, he owned that one.
He built it. Binion's is where poker began. And Terry Rogers, coincidentally, was an old friend of Benny Binion back in the day, and they kept poker alive. Terry Rogers was credited with keeping international poker alive during that era. But the benefit here down at downtown Las Vegas and Fremont Street is the connectivity to each of the properties. So we are affordable. We are more affordable than the Strip, that's a fact, because we have smaller properties, less overhead. So affordability and connectivity. So you can walk from property to property and experience different places. So the Golden Nugget is an outstanding experience, very different from the old Western classic of Binion's and Four Queens, very different from the Fremont, and very different from the D and the Golden Gate, all those different experiences. But not just that, we also downtown have the Mob Museum, Container Park, we've got the Smith Center of Performing Arts. There's so a lot more to do here than just entertainment and gaming. There's a lot of history in downtown Las Vegas, and that's why this street in downtown is on an absolute resurgence right now, and is about to be further emphasized and grown by the new LED screen and three hotel developments. There's just a lot going on, which is great down here.
Yeah, it's so vibrant. I went for a walk around earlier on today and it is literally buzzing, which is quite fun. I want to jump back to something you mentioned earlier on, you alluded to it earlier on, which was the shooting, which took place in 2017. Again, I was at Mandalay Bay earlier today, which is a gorgeous hotel. It's an iconic looking hotel. But as I stood there, I couldn't help think of the shooting. Like, what's the legacy of that shooting? Has security and procedure in the city changed as a result?
Yeah, a couple of basic ones. Procedures have changed. So the Do Not Disturb signs, the DND signs, a lot of the properties now won't allow a room to go unchecked for more than 24 hours, even if there's a Do Not Disturb sign on there. That may or may not have protected us against that shooting October 1st, 2017. And also then procedures and policies and surveillance and security regarding bags going up to rooms. The shooter should never have been able to bring that many bags up. That should never have gone past any security or surveillance system. And I was going to say vigilance citywide, but we run an outdoor entertainment district here. The weekend immediately after that October 1st, we were hosting a 40,000 person biker event, right? So we were immediately planning for more security. We just hosted on New Year's Eve a 40,000 person New Year's Eve event. And while security and surveillance, security specifically and safety and law enforcement and safety, public safety, have always been a high priority for us, it's certainly been elevated, which further protects the city. So we've become smarter for it, unfortunately, and also being more vigilant about such incidents. You'll notice with this being a big pedestrianised area, we've protected, and not because of October 1st, but prior to that, each of the entrances with big old concrete railings to make sure that nobody's tempted to drive down the middle of the street. And we have permanent crash-rated bollards coming in. It's just unfortunate that that is the society in which we live in, and we have to take such measures, but it is what it is for now.
But it is interesting and good to see that it hasn't put the kibosh on the entertainment aspect of Las Vegas, because when I was here last year, there were about three or four different gigs going on for the week that I was in the T-Mobile Arena. Mm-hmm. And there seems to be plenty going on. I walked by the two different stages in this area just today. It's such a vibrant city.
Yeah, as I said, there's no comparison to sitting in your bedroom playing poker on online.
But the jet lag is awful.
Then don't sleep. there's no comparison. Vegas is such a unique place. And that's when, over the last, however many years I've been here, as gaming has expanded throughout all but three states in this country, this city has rarely been, hasn't been really concerned about competition, because there's no comparison to the atmosphere here. People come here to have fun, and that is our primary job, primary function, irrelevant of which aspect of the entertainment industry you're in, whether it be music, as I said, or gaming, or entertainment, or ziplining, you name it. We're here to ensure that people have fun, and they do so safely, and they come back, and they want to come back, because it's just such a unique experience here.
That was Patrick Hughes speaking to me in Las Vegas last week. Coming up next, I play table tennis with a robot.
Tech Talk. Rate and subscribe.
Welcome back to Tech Talk. Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. I'm continuing to bring you some of the best bits from my time at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. I was there with Harvey Norman, and without a shadow of a doubt, the highlight of my week was playing table tennis with a robot. This happened at the Omron stand in the Las Vegas Convention Center. The purpose of their display was to showcase how humans and robots can coexist in a peaceful manner.
I am Mike Chen. I am the Director of Corporate Engineering for the Omron Automation Americas business. So Omron is a global leader in technology that is designed to solve social issues and improve society, and really solve social issues so that we can actually benefit society. Our whole founding principle was that technology should be made for the direct benefit of people, that it is not human versus machine, but is the harmony between the harmony together with humans and machines. And that's what we're trying to show here, is our company philosophy and our vision to really have people like yourself understand who we are, and everybody here, people that are going to be looking for partners, looking for vendors, and looking for probably employment, to understand what exciting work we're doing. We are in front of Forpheus. Forpheus is the Guinness Book of World Record holder as the first AI-embedded table tennis tutor. It is a tutor. It is not meant to beat the person. It is meant to improve and unlock the human potential. The AI optimization algorithm is to increase the number of rallies, not decrease. So the idea is, from a beginner level all the way up to an expert level, it is there to tutor the person and improve human capability. And throughout that, this is a demo. Forpheus is a very, very nice way to encapsulate all of our technologies together around AI, robotics, motion, and vision. But on the other side of our booth, in our factory harmony experience, we will take you through it, and we'll show you where in the real world, where human and machines are interacting together and using our products. So what you're looking at here is the Forpheus Ping Pong Tutor robot. Up at the top, we have the head of Forpheus, which is embedded with five different cameras so that it can recognize the paddle, the ball, and the player all at once in very high speed. Again, it is a tutor. So the reason why it needs to know all that is to understand how to return the ball to the player in a way that they can return it, right? So they can increase the number of times they hit and therefore gradually improve the human skill.
Awesome. And so the player is not wearing a sensor, or is there a sensor in the paddle?
The player is not wearing any special sensors. They are using a special paddle with dots on it, but the dots on the paddle are there so that the stereo camera can actually pinpoint how they are spinning the ball. This is our fifth generation Forpheus with improved AI and range of motion. In previous generations, people said, oh, we need to have top spin and backspin. So that's what we did. We improved it on this generation to have top spin, backspin, an elbow joint, a wrist joint, and this advanced technology to recognize the skill level of the player and improve it gradually.
And so you mentioned there that, you know, this, it's not meant to beat the human.
Absolutely.
Could we get to a stage, though, where we have a tournament of, you know, who can build the best ping pong playing robot?
Right, so our vision is that we are looking for partners and customers that share this ethical view of how technology should be used to improve the human society and human condition. The idea of the technology is that it can be used to optimize for the benefit of the player and benefit of human workers. So this is just a representation of it, but it is up to all of us as a society to ethically use that technology.
How long has this been in development? How long does it take to get it to this stage?
Yeah, so this is the fifth generation Forpheus. We have, I think the earliest version was at least 5 years ago or so. So this is, again, enabling the demonstration, the very fun way to demonstrate the integration of AI, robotics, and vision. But over on the other side, we will walk you through the real world examples of where people can interact with our technology. So this is our Factory Harmony experience. A lot of the feedback that we received last year, we're very excited to come back to CES. As soon as Forpheus was introduced last year at CES, he became an overnight celebrity, right? Overnight celebrity, and the biggest question was, how does this actually apply to the real world? Similar to your questions. The Factory Harmony experience shows how humans are interacting with technology today in the factory, the modern factory, to ensure quality of product for the consumer. All of this technology works with humans to improve the safety of the human worker and the quality of the end product so that consumers, when they buy it, they can rely that this has been manufactured in a proper way. This tour experience goes through a custom product being made for you directly on the floor. You will get a custom tin with your information burned on it directly from your badge, and then show how in the real world somebody would be working at the system and transfer their product to a mobile robot. The mobile robot is completely autonomous and is able to transport product from point A to point B in any type of flexible configuration. And then from there, we'll load you up with some giveaway magnets, souvenir magnets for you to take home. So what you're gonna see here is that we're gonna scan your badge, and the scan will actually trigger the robot to load a blank tin into the laser marker. The laser marker represents a way to mass customize product for consumer consumption. This would be things like automotive parts, or for medical devices, or anything where something needs to be very personal to that customer themselves. It's gonna load the tin in, and the laser marker takes the data from that badge, detects where the tin is located, and then burns that person's information directly in about 20 seconds.
And you mentioned that this isn't about replacing humans, it's just working more efficiently and more accurately.
Correct. This is to increase product quality. We are absolutely looking after the safety of the worker and the safety of that end user. The end user, the consumer, they want to make sure that the product has been successfully created and manufactured to specification.
And in terms of running costs, I mean, I'm sure something like this is expensive to implement, but how long before you get a return on investment versus, you know, a traditional manual labor force?
Actually, the return on investment on these types of products is definitely depending on how much throughput it is. Right now, the manufacturing process cannot keep up with this type of manufacturing. So our focus is to increase the productivity so that people right now that are working, skilled laborers, are enhanced by the technology instead of doing this type of this procedure completely manually.
Are there new skill sets developing to maintain these type of machines and obviously then find other ways which they can then become more productive themselves?
Absolutely. The idea of all of these technologies is that technology creates further jobs. Any technology and innovation creates further jobs, and humans as innovative creatures, we are then challenged with how to implement better ways to produce products or better ways to satisfy real-world customers, other people, and along societal issues and societal needs. So your information now, because we scanned your badge, is now put into the traceability database. The traceability database shows how, as you interact with our demos at the booth, you will be followed through and said, okay, did you interact? Did you get your first process completed? And do you have a customized tin? From there, we will lead you through and get you a couple magnets to take home with you, souvenir magnets. But in the real world, this would be ensuring that every single step of a manufacturing process is kept. Because if you were buying a car, you would absolutely want to know that every single measure was taken to ensure the car was assembled properly.
And so far, I've only interacted with one person who scanned my badge. Everything else has been autonomous so far.
Correct. And now in the back end, we have our workers that would be still doing a skilled trade, whether they are operating the machinery or maintaining the machinery or are helping to optimize that individual machine. They are still working. The robots and the technologies that we are designing are there to enhance their capabilities and further their productivity. The idea here is the real-world usage of the same high-speed robot that you saw in Forpheus playing ping pong. That same high-speed robot technology would be used in being able to fulfill different orders for real-world consumers. If there's any type of product, for example, those subscription boxes that people are doing these days, and they want their customized snack or their customized gathering of groceries or anything like that, this is a way that you could optimize that so that you could keep up with the demand of a real consumer, still having full traceability of the product, full traceability of the process.
And so what is the margin of error here? I mean, because you know, we all know that things can go wrong from time to time. Is that a factor that is, you know, watched by a human eye to ensure that it is doing what it should be doing?
Well, one of the things that you saw right in the demo was that my engineer member here, he has explained to you the vision system underneath. Ormon is a manufacturer of vision systems as well as robotic systems. The vision systems would be directly tied in together and integrated together so that the error proofing could be done inside the vision system potentially, but there's always the interaction point with a human to say, final check or final processes, how can I make this better? How can I as a person, a human with intelligence, improve this process continuously and even further?
Is there any industry that this wouldn't work in, particularly with ones where, you know, there is a lot of repetition? This just seems to make any industry that I'm thinking of, it seems to have benefits for it.
We would say that there are a lot of benefits in any type of tasks where a human can be made more safe or a product can be made with higher quality using data-driven decisions in order to optimize that. It is all about that harmony so that the people can be kept safe, the human workers can be kept safe, and the end consumer can have a reliable quality product.
Security is obviously a big issue as well. So if you're optimizing a lot of your productivity with these type of devices, how big a threat is potential hacks and so on?
Very interesting question. We have seen that as a topic of discussion these days. We are following that conversation. None of our technology requires internet connectivity. None of our technology requires cloud. Can we connect to cloud? Absolutely. We work with customers all the time that want to do advanced analysis or long-term storage of data in a secure and safe way in the cloud. But our technology is designed to enable people on the floor, on the manufacturing floor, or in the engineering environment so that they can keep complete control over their data and complete security over their information and their lifeblood in their production process. The final stop on your tour is with our brand new collaborative robot. The collaborative robot really epitomizes the idea of harmony between human and machine. It is a robot that can be used in coordination with humans in the workplace. The collaborative robot in our demo here will be taking your souvenir magnets and loading them into your tray. Again, the idea of the collaborative robot is that it is completely interactive with the human. Using the built-in vision system, we are able to detect your three magnets, where they are, where they're positioned, and then using the pre-programmed robot to actually load them into the tin. With a little bit more time, you can actually program it yourself. These are so intuitive to program and so easy to use that we've also allowed for attendees to CES to actually interact with the robot. who have never touched a robot before, we are encouraging you guys to do so. We want to demystify the idea that robots are out to get us. We are here to promote the harmony between human and machine.
We know that the robot that can play ping pong is the entry point for consumers to get into it. Do you think that we have much explaining to do to the general consumer about the usefulness of these robots and how they're not a threat?
I think that is definitely a place that we are trying to engage with that conversation. And through our vision of harmony with humans and machines, we are having that conversation every day to make sure people understand that these technologies, when used responsibly, can help people and develop human potential, unlocking human potential.
That was Mike Chen of Omron. Coming up next, the kitchen of the future.
Tech Talk. Rate and subscribe.
Welcome back to Tech Talk. As always, you can email the show techtalk@newstalk.com. We met some brilliant Irish businesses at the Consumer Electronics Show with Harvey Norman last week. One such company was Drop.
My name is Maria Martanfi and I'm head of partnerships and strategy at Drop. So at Drop, we're really focused on allowing each home cook to be more successful in making more home cooks. And we do that through our recipe app, which really allows the user to stay in the moment with step-by-step guidance for recipes. Search here, let's search for red pepper soup. And let's go to this one. So again, we see the photo here and we see the serving. So let's go and edit. Let's say that I don't have, what don't I have? Let's say that I don't have vegetable stock with me. So I just click the edit button here. And let's say I'm gonna substitute in chicken stock because I do have that. It'll automatically update the recipe here. So it's now ready to make. The other really neat thing, here at left, you'll see a list of the tools that I actually have in my kitchen. So each Drop recipe is personalized to the kitchen that you actually have. And I think when we were understanding, especially at CES, the adoption of smart kitchen is something that happens incrementally over time. You know, you don't go out and buy a whole new brand spanking new kitchen, even though I'm sure the folks at CES would love it if you did. As you add more and more smart devices, you link those with your Drop account so that those show up here at left immediately. So it's leveraging all of these tools. It knows you have those and it'll reflect all of these tools in the recipes. So if we go to make this recipe now, for example, we'll start here with the prep. So because Drop started with the smart scale, which you'll see here at right, we're able actually to measure out the ingredients on the scale and go through very quickly. We realize that not everyone has a Drop scale. If you don't, that's just as well. We can measure out the correct number of ingredients and kind of go step by step by step through the recipe here. This recipe specifically is, because of the way we've set the profile up, is actually catered to the Kenwood K-Cook. So what you'll see here is the K-Cook slicing disc. It'll help you to assemble and give you kind of tips and tricks for whatever appliance that the recipe is using. So if it's for the Thermomix, for example, I'll show you another recipe in a minute that will optimize and show you the right settings to put it at. So there's really no way to fail using
the Drop
app. I love
this. So I am useless at cooking. Like, I am worse than useless at cooking. And I love at the beginning, you could see the difficulty level.
Right.
And then you have, as you said, the ingredients, which you can swap out, the tools that you need, and then a step-by-step with diagram.
Exactly.
So even I could make this soup.
You would be marvelous. So you can fit the top here. So now if it's time to preheat the oven, you press preheat. So you're controlling everything from the app itself, which is really useful. And especially here with the hub, you're able to be very close to what it is that you're actually doing, which is lovely, and monitor things that way in addition to on an app or iPad if you happen to not be the lucky owner of the GE Hub. So here again, we show you what it's like to slice red bell pepper and what that attachment is needed for. We'll kind of skip ahead here. And, you know, I should mention that this version of the app and the app that's available now is very much geared towards beginning cooks. I think what you'll see from us coming in 2019 is a lot of these steps kind of condensed for those cooks who are more comfortable, who maybe don't want this step by step by step, for whom it's, you know, they're confident enough to not need to know, you know, this is what pairing means or this is how you julienne a pepper. So for them, there will be kind of versions coming out that will reflect that. So when it's time to roast, you just press the play button, easy as pie. Your oven turns on and you'll see a timer here that'll stay on the screen to tell you that we're actually roasting those red peppers for 20 minutes. When it goes off, there's no way to burn it because it's going to be going off and telling you that you've got to take it out of the oven and do the next step. And each step is kind of, especially this one, is locked, so you can't really go ahead until you need to, so we sort of save you from yourself.
Oh, that's very good.
Yeah.
Well, it's very neat as well. I like how interactive, and it's a very clean interface. It's not too busy.
Yeah, we've worked very hard to get it that way, so the guys have done a great job.
And, you know, I suppose the natural progression for this would be voice control. Is that something you're looking at too?
Absolutely. So in Q1 from us, you'll be seeing voice control coming out. We really want to support across the board, you know, especially here at CES. You see the battle between Alexa and Google Home and, you know, even Siri a little bit less so, but we're definitely looking to support across the board the voice experiences, because it is such an integral way to communicate in the kitchen when you think of even the most basic use case of, you know, I have chicken fingers on my hands, right? I'm trying to put a rotisserie chicken in the oven. There's no way, because my hands are all full of chicken juice, that I want to be touching things or saying next is much easier.
And so then talk to me just about the scale, because this is where it all started. So we had one of these in the studio a good while ago. So just remind us what it is.
Yeah, so in about 2014, we were sold in all the Apple stores in Canada and in the US. And really the smart scale itself started as our entree into the home appliance space. So it's a really simple user interface to allow folks to measure out the quantities they need. And that's really what started us into the software space, because we created recipes that paired really nicely with the scale, and then realized that although the scale was lovely and great and we still sell it, the secret sauce was really in the experience we'd created with the recipe and with this step-by-step experience that allows for success.
How long or how far away do you think we are from this becoming the normal kitchen? Because at the moment, if somebody has a fancy cackle, they think that they're from the Jetsons.
Right.
This is next level and next level again.
Yeah, so I mean, I think when we look at, we're in a really privileged position given all the appliance manufacturers that we're working with, and at Drop, we have a pretty strong tech background just in general from past experience. And I think when we look at the field, we see that coming in 2020, the vast majority of appliances that are going to be shipped will have Wi-Fi enabled. And our mission is really to allow each and every one of those appliances to shine, because many times the manufacturers are focused on, you know, really spec creep and putting everything possible into this device to make the best possible user experience. And the technology is there for that from the hardware perspective, but not necessarily from the software perspective. So that's where we come in, to really allow each and every one of those devices to shine and work together in concert. Because kind of not so dirty little secret is that no one buys a unified, one-branded kitchen, right? If you look at kitchens across the board, 90% of kitchens are multi-brand, which means that you need somebody, kind of an agnostic player, a neutral Switzerland, if you will, to come into the middle of it and act to unify everything that is connected and give that connectivity meaning. And it's that kind of meaningful experience that we're really building, so that we create a sticky, sticky user experience that makes you want to cook.
I'll give it a go. Thank you so much.
My name is Jeremy Miller. I'm the commercial director for Smart Home Solutions at GE Appliances.
So just tell us a little bit about GE Appliances.
So GE Appliances, we're over 100 years old. We're an appliance manufacturer in North America. And one thing that we're showcasing here today is a lot of our innovation around the smart home. You know, we've invested a lot in our technology, and we really believe that this is the next step for the appliances in our customers' homes is connectivity. And so, you know, we've actually been first in a lot of areas. So we were the first appliance manufacturer to launch with Amazon Alexa's voice assistant, with Google Assistant as well. We also work with Apple HomeKit with our air conditioner. And then also what we're showcasing here, which I think you've talked to the Drop team a little bit about, is our Kitchen Hub, which is our latest innovation, a 27-inch smart screen vent hood that goes inside the kitchen. It's packed with all sorts of great features that bring more convenience to our customers and a lot of different interactivity that they can get either through Drop or various apps they can get from Google, as well as access Google Assistant, the cameras that we have embedded in the system for communicating with friends and family through video chat, as well as streaming things that they're cooking on top of their cooktop with a downward-facing camera.
And how ready is the consumer for this type of technology and this level of technology in the kitchen? Because I know a lot of people in my own family are just about getting to grips with a touchscreen smartphone.
Yeah. It's a great question. So I think obviously there's a segment of the market out there that's extremely ready for this type of innovation, right? We have lots of customers who are connected today, who use our products on a regular basis. And I think what we're going to see, especially as we work with our partners, and we believe in an open ecosystem, right? We believe in allowing partners like Drop to create new value on top of our connected appliances. I think as more and more partners like that create more value for consumers and create these new and interesting experiences, I think we'll see more demand for connected products. And I think that's going to be a really great driver that helps people start to really get excited about connecting their products. So, yeah, it's still somewhat early days, but I definitely think we're starting to see a trend that this is where, you know, consumers are going to want from their appliances. I think one day, very shortly, it's not going to be about, you know, is this appliance connected or not? It's going to be like, it must be connected, right? People are just going to expect that their appliances be connected like everything else in their home.
And so how long before the vision that I see around me here now becomes the norm, not in every home, but in the majority of homes?
I think you could probably see, you know, within 5 years or so that it's going to be, you know, kind of commonplace for people to have smart appliances within their homes. You know, we think about, you know, what people own today and the adoption rates that we're seeing. You know, I think you'll see more and more adoption of stuff like this. I think, again, the more that we start to work with partners and start to tie these things together, the more you'll see people gravitating towards, you know, things like connected GE appliances, right? You know, the fact that we work with all the voice assistants, right? That's a really great benefit for our customers for a variety of reasons. Anything from, you know, convenience to giving people the exciting features that they're looking for. It's just, you know, a great enabler for us to get the story out and get people more excited.
So there you have it. The Kitchen of the Future is on the way. And that is all we have time for this week. If you missed any of the show, you can listen back in full up on newstalk.com. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast in iTunes, Pocket Casts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Patrick Aiken is up next here on Newstalk. I'll chat to you next week.